1, 2, 3, 4.
This thing.
So it's what another episode.
What episode number are we on?
152 and a half? 58, I think. 158? Is that right? You're the guy. You're supposed to know.
152 and a half, 158.
It's 158.
Yeah. I think as soon as we broke off homeschool film school, suddenly my math stopped working with episode numbers.
That show's got to come back soon. I think at the November is probably our realistic return date for that show on its own feed, not on this feed, folks. Don't come back here for that. Come here for us.
Hey.
This is like another special episode. We've got another interview this week. That's we're getting used to this. We're getting spoiled.
Right. And it was a rather fun interview. Absolutely.
Yeah, we should say we've already done it.
Yeah. Bro.
So Finders Keepers, you were saying? What about Finders Keepers?
Holy smokes. Okay, so you gave me a link to, and you said, watch this movie. I'm not going to tell you anything about it. But you seemed to say it in a way like it was going to be a positive thing. And so I knew nothing about it. It's a documentary, and holy smokes, it's the best new documentary that I've seen all year as far as one that's come out in 2015. It's the story of Shannon, how do you say Shannon's last name even?
It's Wisnan?
Wisnan. And really, let's just say two guys, Shannon and John, had a bit of a disagreement over who owned a certain leg. Because, should I give the synopsis of what happened? It was more or less, John, this gentleman, is in a plane crash. He loses a leg. He decides he's going to keep it. At that point, he kind of misplaces it, we'll say. It ends up with Shannon, who decides he's going to take this as a souvenir and tourist attraction, more or less, and make some money off of it as an opportunity. Of course, John decides he wants his old leg back. And the craziest true story I've probably ever heard in my real life ensued after that. And it was a documentary all about it, well told from the subjects themselves. And we were able to talk to Shannon today, which was absolutely, absolutely wild.
So, I mean, before we get to that, so you liked the movie, it sounds like. You were a fan. Was I right that you guys enjoyed it?
Yes, yeah. It took me back to the first movie. It's the first movie I've seen that reminded me of the documentary American Movie that came out in 99, I think. The story of, a man in middle America trying to make the great American film.
Yes, I remember it. So I had to look it up, but I totally remember this movie.
And everything that ensued as a result. But just as far as getting set down in this location with a group of people that, it's a combination of like American Movie meets the Wild, Wonderful Whites of West Virginia. If you mashed those two documentaries together, you would get Finders Keepers.
Yeah, that's not a bad comparison at all. I saw this film as a part of the Chattanooga Film Festival back in April and have been talking about it since. It is just it's so unique and bizarre and watchable from beginning to end. And I really enjoyed it then. It stuck with me all this time. And it's now out on VOD and on demand, so you can get it at home. I'm sure that means that eventually it will hit Netflix as well. But for now, you can rent that on iTunes, Amazon, and all that those sort of things. And I really recommend it. It's only 82 minutes long, so it's an easy watch. And it's both funny and I think poignant in places, but very, it's just enthralling all the way through. And I hope more people will watch it.
For such a, if you just hearing the initial log line or when the story is initially set up, it feels so incredibly one-sided, no pun intended, I guess. That wouldn't even a great pun, even. But like,
one-legged.
Yeah, there you go. But this thing just skips along the whole way. Like, it just, they did such a terrific job of showing both sides of this tale. And it really just, it leaves an impression on you for sure. It never lets up through the entire thing. And I mean, as of right now, it's sitting like in the, you know, the upper 90s on Rotten Tomatoes. I mean, everyone is just praising this documentary, and I couldn't recommend it more. If you're a fan of documentaries in general or just crazy stories, this movie's got something for you for sure the entire way through.
Definitely. And before we get to Shannon, we did talk last week about seeing The Martian, and we were going to review that. But when Finders Keepers, when the screener hit my inbox, I went, oh no, we got to talk about this thing. And then it sort of escalated into this conversation with Shannon, which was really a great surprise. But I did get to see The Martian, so I wanted to give my quick two cents to that, and say that if you liked the book, you'll like the movie. That's sort of the kind of the first thing. It's a massive bestseller. But Matt Damon stars as an astronaut who is stranded on Mars. He is the Martian. There are no aliens in the movie, which is a good thing.
I'm bummed I didn't get to see that. I met some guy named Joaquin this week, this hurricane over in, you know, I live in Charleston. That was a bit of a hindrance to getting out to the theater. So I'm very interested to hear your thoughts.
It's like the Castaway comparison has come up a lot. I've seen that on Twitter a lot, Castaway on Mars. And I don't disagree with it necessarily. I think the biggest difference is that this is a comedy about the human spirit more than a drama about the human spirit. And Matt Damon is very funny, and it's very well performed. I really liked it. It's solid entertainment. I think it's the best thing director Ridley Scott has done maybe since Gladiator. It is a very solid movie. I don't know if it's a great movie, one of the all-timers, but it's very solid, and I can see it. It's one of those things, if it came on TV, if I still had cable, I would probably not turn the channel. But I'm glad I saw it. I would say see it in the theater if you guys get a chance, because of the sound. Like, the sound is really good. There's a little bit of atmosphere on Mars, and so we get some sound, and it's really, really well done. So it's a nice, intense stranding experience in the theater. But I didn't love it, but I really liked it. I'm glad I saw it. And if you like Matt Damon, you'll definitely like this, because he's in almost all of it, and is just very funny and charming. And it seems like the guy who did the ice bucket challenge videos, that's the guy who got stranded on Mars instead of like some other type of Matt Damon. And so it's not Bourne Supremacy on Mars at all. He's not overly serious. Which makes it all work. Instead of being this deep, sad thing, it's just a really funny movie, and I think has a nice message at the end. It's a little hokey, but when my kid's like 10, I'm going to be like, let's watch The Martian, and he'll like it, and it'll be a good thing for him. So not terrible.
Yeah, that's nice to hear. After our conversation last week, talking about superhero movies getting so dark and serious and you know, how you can't even take a kid to watch a superhero movie half the times anymore. That sounds nice and refreshing. I'm definitely going to have to check that one out.
I would say when the song Love Train closes out the movie, you sort of have an idea for the overall tone. That's not a real spoiler. It's just I thought that the tone was really good, and I think it matches the book in a lot of ways. I think the only thing that I miss is the character in the book. You get to spend so much more time with him, and instead of splitting time between him and people on Earth, which does happen in the book, it's just a lot less. And I wish that we had actually just spent more time, like Castaway, just stranded with Matt Damon. There's this whole thing where he is doing his NASA journal every day, and it's a video journal, which is all technology that they use, and it works so well because it fits into how the actual astronaut lifestyle would be. So he's in communication with us constantly, and so I would have done with 20 more minutes of that and 20 minutes less of people on Earth. That's the biggest thing I would have changed, and I think it would have made it the great movie it could have been. But it's a very good movie, and I recommend it. It's probably gonna make a ton of money, which it should, because it's a PG-13 movie for smart people that isn't, yeah, about the sadness and global warming and things like that.
But
yeah.
So great segue into North Carolina folk that have fighting over a leg.
Yes,
those are two about as different movies as you can get, I guess.
I would say that would be a fantastic double feature. Like, you would have such a great day at the movies, because like Finders Keepers is a very fun movie to watch. It would be a great double feature. But I would say watch The Martian second, in case the Finders Keepers, some of this, it has a very, I think, a downer tone towards the end. And the Martian might pep you back up a little bit, or just listen to an interview with Shannon. I think it'll definitely make you feel good.
Because Finders Keepers, the thing about Finders Keepers is, at the beginning of it felt like going back to that Wild, Wonderful Wives of West Virginia reference. They that the whole time felt like you're just sitting there gawking at these people, just going like, wow, these people are absolutely crazy. And you just get to be a fly on the wall in the midst of this craziness. This movie starts out, it feels like that's the way it's going to just progress the entire way through. But then you learn more about the people and their stories and how this crazy story brought them together, tore them apart at times, but ultimately changed them all in some way or another. It ends on, I'll definitely say, a more serious note, gives you something to think about. So it sounds like The Martian would be a bit of a palate cleanser, maybe.
And, you know, for the interview, I don't know, in terms of setting it up, we basically just jumped right in. We got on the Skype call and we just kind of went in. Shannon, if you've seen the movie, is quite opinionated about people. And so we don't know any of the people he's talking about. His opinions don't represent ours. Our legal disclaimer is over. But he's a very entertaining guy, and he's got a lot of stories. And it's so interesting to talk to a subject of a documentary, because I think we always think about talking to the people who made them. And we did that a few weeks ago with Mark Covino, which was a lot of fun. And I think this is a great companion to that, in that we're going to the people who had the cameras pointed at them. And it's really, really entertaining and interesting conversation with honestly one of the most unique individuals I've ever seen on screen or talked to on this podcast.
And I would highly recommend watching the film ideally before hearing the interview, because context is important when talking with Shannon, because I swear, if I was just to list out all the subjects as they go down, did we cover not just a lot of topics, but the variety was rather astounding. Definitely the most entertaining interview I can remember having.
Yeah, and we'll put the links in the show notes to watch it, because, we assume going into it that whoever's listening has seen the film, and so does Shannon. So we could say spoiler alert for real life, but spoiler alert, because we're going to, we just get into it. So, watch the movie. It's well worth your time. And if Shannon, took the time to talk to us, take the time to watch his movie. I would guarantee that you will like it. And it's rare that I will just full on guarantee it, but I would guarantee that you'll like Finders Keepers.
There's definitely no way you're not going to have a strong opinion about it. Intense is a good word for it. Not intense like a Bourne movie or something, but just it's one of those things where, again, fact is stranger than fiction. There's no way someone could have written this stuff. And it was a documentary 7 years in the making, which is another reason it's just told so well, because it took better part of a decade, I guess, to get to see this story progression, and then to have it all condensed down to 80 some odd minutes. It's a powerful piece for sure, and frankly one that I think everyone should be proud of that had a part in it. And I think it's going to be talked about with lasting documentaries, ones that really make an impact. I think it'll be on a lot of lists for a long time to come.
And with that great intro, here's Shannon.
Hopefully I know how to do this.
It looks like it's working on my end.
If you got the dime, I got the time.
Hello.
Well, you took care of the intro for us. Shannon, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, friend.
Thanks for being here. I'm Spencer. I won the other half of this podcast. It's good to meet you.
Nice to meet you, Spencer.
So I think
we got video happening over here. I saw you for a second. It's a special kind of call.
Well, I think what we'll end up doing, I mean, I think we're just going to have a general conversation. We're not extremely structured on our show. Right. But I figure I just ask you one question and we'll kind of see where we go from there. A few weeks ago, we interviewed a documentary filmmaker who made a movie called A Band Called Death. And we got a really good insight into what it was like on his end, you know, making a project and coming into a project, how he met his subjects. You were on the opposite, Shu. You are the subject of Finders Keepers. And I'm just curious, how did this project come to you? How did this, aside from your life story, I mean, how did this movie happen for you?
Well, it's kind of a long story.
A 7-year story, right?
Yeah. And there's a lot to answering that question, actually. I will commence. I did a number of interviews with news reporters from television and magazines and newspapers and so forth and so on. And a reporter from the Charlotte Observer called my phone and said that a producer from California called her and asked her if she could give him my number. And she called me first to ask, and I said, sure, pass it along to anybody that asked for it, if you don't mind. And so he calls me up and said, hi, my name is such and such. I'm going to be in your area. Would you care for me to visit and interview you? And I said, that'd be all right, you know. And so he came out and he interviewed me for a few minutes. You know, we kind of met, introduced ourselves, and got to talking about a few things. And then he asked me if he mind if he could bring in a camera and video record the interview. I told him, sure, I don't care, you know. And so he come in and set his little camera up, and he sits behind the camera and he's asking me questions and I'm answering them. And then later, he wanted to do a documentary about this, and he sent me a copy of every DVD that he was involved in creating the documentaries, like The King of Kong, New York Dolls, and I can't remember the other one. He's got like 4 now, not counting Finders Keepers. But me and this gentleman had a verbal agreement. Because he immediately noticed how smart I was, and we had a verbal agreement that any show I brought to his attention, and if he was to sell it, we'd split everything 50-50. Well, that went out the window. Him and his college buddy stole and sold about 8 television shows that I created, and I've not received 2 pennies to rub together for. And their names are Ed Cunningham, and he is a ESPN employee that does college football announcing. And the other gentleman, which was his college roommate or college buddy or whatever, Mark Caden, which owns Mac Pictures. And
Shannon, I got to ask you real fast. Through this whole process, first off, it probably took a heck of a lot longer than anybody was expecting, 7 years. How did the finished product maybe come out compared to what you were thinking it was going to come out? How'd you feel when you saw it for the first time? Had you seen many rough cuts, or was seeing it for the first time really the introduction into seeing all the filming?
I was mad as hell. I mean, they had so much terrific footage of me just being crazy and saying, you know, just being myself. And they used very little of it. And it, to me, it seemed more one-sided and constantly trying to make me look bad or whatever. But I mean, you know, nobody knows the hell I went through. And that's why I wanted to do the documentaries, because the news media and outlets and the radio stations and the television different shows and stuff, everything was edited. I mean, hell, even the Judge Mathis show, they had two separate verdicts. I mean, nobody knows about that, but me and John, we were there, you know? And,
now here's a question though. Okay. When I first went into this movie, I had not heard the story before, and just at first listen to what it's about. If you got to pick a side, good guy, bad guy, it frankly sounded like you were going to be the bad guy. But after I watched it, I thought after watching it, I really saw your side more. Did you not feel like that came through? That they didn't, they weren't reasonable with it?
I'll put it to you this way. I'm still getting threats, death threats and slandered from people all over the country that don't know me and John Wood's family. And friends, I am an eagle eye when it comes to shooting. I can put a bullet hole in a bullet hole at 100 yards.
So what do you think, where do you go from here? Like, cause here's the thing, like, there's that saying, bad press is good press. You know, I mean, you can spin it maybe. What ideally, this new notoriety, or I mean, it's got to have been a big 2015 for you. What would you like the next step to be? Where would you like to go from here? Like, what would be the win-win-win situation? Because I loved that, by the way. I absolutely loved that.
Well, that's just one of my sayings. I've got a rule of thumb, well, several rules of thumb that I've lived by my entire life. If there's something you want and you can't pay for it at one time, why buy it? Because the only person making money is the bank. And, you know, I believe in investing money, your money, that you earn blood, sweat, and tears from, investing money in something you can feel, taste, touch, smell, drive, pick up and carry, something tangible. And I always seeked merchandise that you could buy for pennies on the dollar and sell for a dollar. I mean, I literally bought merchandise for a penny a piece and sold them for a dollar a piece. You tell me what the math is. I mean, you know, it's pretty simple. If you're not making money hand over fist, then, you know, it's like either take a shit on a toilet or get the fuck off. Somebody else has got to take a shit. You know what I mean?
I think you got your next T-shirt right there with that. You can fit half of it on the front, half of it on the back.
Yeah. I got
a lot. Are you still selling those T-shirts? Because when I saw them last night, when I was watching it, I thought, okay, clearly I got to get one of those. Do you still sell those, or can you, or what's the deal with that?
I've got an order in, but the guy that does my printing, he's like, way behind because somebody ordered some shirts, like 8,000 shirts, and he's just a small company and everything. So as soon as he gets caught up with that in a few weeks, I will have some shirts. But the only ones I'm going to do at this time are going to have my face on it, and they'll probably, you'll have two color choices, black and pink. And the pink ones, I'm going to try a sand color or a Caucasian, if you will, color print on the pink. And if it doesn't work out, then we'll cancel the pink line and just do blacks, black shirts with a white picture on it. And that way I can autograph it. And we've ordered autograph pens that will, autograph white, silver, black. And some other color. I can't remember what it is, but.
Well, obviously you got to pitch it where people can find these at. You want to pitch the site or plug it?
Actually, got
to make sure we put that in the notes.
I have a huge announcement to make on October the 12th. Me and my wife, she's kind of my manager here, helping me out with things because I'm just bombarded every day, all day on the computer, or constantly getting messages and so forth and so on from casting directors and other people wanting me to network and do voiceover work for cartoons or this or that. And I mean, I've got 16 television shows that I'm working on creating, and it's a lot of work. And I've got one that's already been pitched to the network. They're very interested. I haven't heard anything back yet, which honestly, I really don't care if I do or not, because the network that it was pitched to has stolen from me before. And by buying material that I created from someone else, and, you know, I don't like thieves, liars, and the like. They ride together, and it's hard for me to do business with anybody unless we make friends first. That way I know how much trust I can put into someone, you know. I mean, you don't just give somebody $4,000 or $5,000 and say, here, you know, I'm gonna bail you out of jail or whatever. Make sure you pay me back, or I want all the tools in your shed, or, you know, something. And then if you get locked up, we're adding interest, you know what I'm saying? And that's just the way it works.
Well, are you getting, you know, did you have all of these things in the works before the movie started hitting this year, or have you had a huge influx of potential for you in like these, all these different shows after the movie started hitting all the film festivals and is, you know, going wider and wider over the year?
Well, before the film festival started, I turned down like 12 different television shows that asked me to be on them, because personally, I felt they were tasteless, and what they had to offer was nothing, more or less. You know, no pay, you know, just room and board, and, you know,
almost like they're trying to get you to be paid on the satisfaction of being on TV.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean,
kind of like, I don't know why the hell you're on this show, because it sounds like we fit all those descriptions too.
You know what I'm saying? I'm kind of burned out at this point, because the way I've been treated by the dopey radio show on Sirius XM, FM, whatever the hell it is. They would have never said that shit to my face if I'd have been in there. I'd have choke slammed every one of them right quick, or two blocked them, and they'd been snoring laying in the floor. I used to be a bouncer, and I have took down two football players that played for the Carolina Panthers that was fighting in a bar one night when I was on the clock. And I clotheslined both of them and held them by their throats until the DJ and the bartender got there to help me separate them, but they couldn't reach each other because I had them pushed apart by their throats. And, you know, I've been involved in a lot of different businesses and been around a lot of different things in my life, from airboats to airplanes, antiques. I even owned a shrunken human head at one time, a real shrunken human head.
Never seen one of those.
It was, I bought that in a pile of merchandise from a lady at a flea market. She had some nice hand-carved wood masks, and she had a Indian chief with a full headdress band that went all the way to the ground, almost 3 foot tall. And I asked her, I said, honey, I said, it's awful cold outside. I said, would you care if I was to make you an offer on everything and you could just go home? She said, I absolutely would. I said, what would you take for all of it? And she told me, I said, I'll be right back. Let me go get my hand trucks. And it took me 10 minutes, and by the time I come back, she'd already sold one of the pieces that I wanted, and I still got everything else, and I still paid her the amount we agreed upon just because I knew what was there. And when I got home that night, one of my buyers that bought odd stuff and, you know, different things and collectibles and stuff had come in from Florida, and we were playing poker, and one of my other friends, I'm a professional poker player, but anyway, one of my other friends, he come over, and my wife, she's flipping out because I actually bought things that a witch owned that were used to practice witchcraft, and I didn't know a hill of beans about it. I had the Book of the Dead, the same.
Wait, I got to ask, how many body parts have you found it at flea markets or places? We've got now a leg and a head. Does it keep going?
Well,
like, seriously, the odds of this have got to be incredible.
No, just that one and or two pieces I found. Years ago, my uncle found a foot in a bag that some old man kept in his barn, and my uncle did a well or something for the man, and this old man come out there carrying it to him, showed it to him, and I heard that a few years after I had found a foot. And I also heard that up the street from where I lived, someone found a mummy in a car garage that had been there for 40 years, and it was clearly an Egyptian mummy, and it was hushed right quick, and very little knowledge could I get upon it. But that
you could build a real life version of that board game operation at this point. Put them all together.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Maybe we should network and make that happen.
I'll give you that one. I'll let you have that one. But I would totally play it. I don't know about that, actually.
I'm just so busy, I can't do everything by myself. I mean, I know some different apps I'd like to have someone create, that, you know, I've got a lot of inventions that I've been working on and blueprints for this and that, and I figured out how to adjust the pitch on a prop, like on an airplane or an airboat, so you could adjust it by hand. And I plan on building a new airboat sometime in the near future with a 165 Lycoming aircraft engine. But the boat itself has to weigh less than 500 pounds, and I'm going to have to have it made of carbon fiber. And I had a price quote of $17,500 just for the boat.
That might as well be rocket science, because you're so out of my league. But I've got a question about the fact that now that you've seen, okay, you being in this movie and it taking the 7 years to make, it's almost like one of those Wizard of Oz moments where you like see behind the curtain and you see how it really goes on. After going through that and this movie and all the press surrounding it, you have all these other ideas now. Do you feel like it's kind of scratched that itch as far as the fame and you're ready to move on to other stuff? Or would you like to be involved in more projects?
I would like to move on to other stuff. I mean, when I was 3 years old, I was on the floor model television literally every day. I would climb up on it and I would dance around if a Soul Train was on, or even if my mother was to play the turntable or something, you know, I would get up on there and I would dance, or I would make out like I was a host of Price is Right, or, you know, just all kinds of different things. I would sing in the shower, and my mother and father were amazed at my voice when I was singing in the shower, because I was doing like opera stuff, you know, and just being around different things like that at school. When a big band would come in at school, professional artists would come in, you know, and they would be a composer there and they would do opera or whatever. I mean, it just amazed me, you know. I mean, I couldn't take my eye off of each and every individual separate places in the setup in the band of who was playing when. And, you know, my mind, I could just see the story being told through my mind with the music. And I used to make music for a long time. I wrote a lot of music. We had one professional recording done, and the original copy was lost at the studio, but we did have an original recording studio do a professional copy of a song I wrote, I sang, and I had to play the drums in it because our drummer didn't show up. But the name of that song is Round Mouth Senator. It's about the... Hold on. Let me dodge.
Is that the song right there?
No. That's one of my friends. He calls me about every day with some other news. He's extremely mad about the dopey radio show.
Has this experience, do you think, has it sullied any of those memories? You've got all these great memories from your childhood about the, you know, wanting to be in entertainment. And then, you know, you see behind the curtain, it's kind of gross. Has that messed up any of that old stuff for you? Or do you just still look at that fondly and just think, well, you know, now I'm just going to move past that?
Like I said in the movie, when I was a kid, at night, when we would go flounder gigging in my father's airboat as a child, I would stay up till like 11 o'clock or whatever, and I might help gig some, or I might stand on the front of the boat, or I might take my dip net and catch minnows or whatever. And I would, about 11 o'clock, I would get sleepy, and I would eat a can of Beanie Weenies and some saltine crackers, and my mother would put down a quilt for me to lay on the floor. And I would lay in it and go to sleep. And while I'm laying there, I'm looking at stars in the sky and just watching the stars, because they're so beautiful when you're way out next to the Outer Banks and it's dark and the sky looks like you could literally reach up and touch stars. And I made a couple wishes. One, I wished that I was famous. Two, I wished that I was a movie star and on TV all the time. And you know, both of those wishes have kind of come true. And be careful.
I'd say more than kinda.
Well,
I mean, man, look at the reviews. You're talking about best documentary, not just documentary of the year, but one of the best movies of the year. You made it happen. And maybe sometimes the, you know, how we perceive it, it doesn't feel any different because we're still the same person. But man, I'm sitting here getting excited to talk to you. You're a guy that I just watched on a movie last night. Yeah, I mean, you're a movie star to people, man. And, you know, maybe it doesn't feel that way, but I just, that wish has come true. Maybe it just doesn't, you know, maybe it just doesn't feel the way you wanted it to feel, which is understandable. Isn't that the way a lot of our things go, you know?
Well, Ed told me that, I mean, there was no discussion whatsoever about this documentary going to be played at theaters. He more or less told me that, you know, it's going to be on TV, blah, blah, blah. And there was no money to be made in it. And I'm not making a penny off of it. Unless it does as good as Star Wars, then I'm supposedly supposed to. I believe that when there's when Walmart starts selling dry water, I'll believe it.
Well, you know. Shannon, I got a chance to see your movie at the Chattanooga Film Festival with a packed house, and for me it was interesting because it started off and I just being honest about the experience, I felt like, you know, at the beginning people are laughing, but maybe not for good reasons. Like probably at everyone on screen, it just sort of felt like mean in the way the movie was. But by the end of the thing, the theater is very quiet, and I saw a bunch of movies that weekend, and that was one that a lot of us talked about, and more, I think, insightfully than anything else. I mean, it wasn't one that where we walked away making fun of anybody in it, because we really started thinking about, like, put ourselves in your shoes, and really, I think it opened up a lot of interesting conversation. But I understand a little bit that you're not extremely happy with the end product. Do you want people to see the movie? I mean, do you think people should see the movie from your point of view?
Yes, absolutely. They should see it, but they should also know that there's a hell of a lot more to that story. John Wood had, after we did the Judge Mathis show, Intel Picture Studio had one, which was owned by Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers spent, I think, I'm not sure, I heard an estimated $2.4 million to get him off crack. And he lived in Atlanta going through these classes or whatever for like 2 years or longer. And when he comes back, we started to communicate a little bit. And I, you know, one day he just comes out of the blue and just really pissed me off, and I just completely cut him off forever. And after the last show we were on before the documentary, I decided never again, no amount of money would get me on stage or on any show that he's going to be involved with ever again, anywhere. No cost. My soul is not for sale, and I do have my own religious beliefs.
And so at this point, you and John haven't been in contact in a while, and that's that stayed as things are.
I mean, my wife interacts with him or whatever, you know, and he...
I imagine you have to with the movie coming out, and I'm sure you guys are trying, people trying to get you guys together.
You know, it's not going to happen. You know, I just... It wouldn't happen, period.
I think that's fair. I think that's something that happens to people watching movies like this is they sort of forget that the people they're watching on screen are real people. And it becomes like a TV show where they think, oh, next week they should do something else. And it's I think it's interesting to hear from you as you and sort of saying where you're at now and what the future looks like for you. I think this, to me, this is more interesting than anything in the movie.
Well, I'll be honest with you. Something else a lot of people don't know. I've been bedbound off and on for the last 7 3/4 years. Every spring and summer, I'm bedbound. And I need multiple surgeries. I can't get any help medically or financially. And they did a colonoscopy on me when I was in the hospital, and they put me in the hospital because for 4 days in a row, I kept telling my mother, my wife, and my friend that was helping me work to try to get our boats in tip-top shape. And I kept telling them I felt like I'm about to die, and I couldn't move around or walk but about 4 hours, and then after that, I had to sit down. I was just deadly tired, and I kept telling them I feel like I'm dying, you know. So after 4 days of them having to walk me and kind of carry me in the house to the bed, they took me to the emergency room, and after that, they put me in the hospital and monitored my heart for a week. My heart's not any good. My liver's not any good. My kidney's not any good. And most of that's probably from alcohol. I used to drink like a fish. And
did you have to stop that? Because they show, I guess, some of that in the movie a little bit, or at least it's alluded to, you talking about it. But are you off the sauce now, or are you still...
I still make alcohol. I make the best wine you ever drunk in your life. I could probably make beer if I fooled around with it a little bit, but I make exotic wines. I don't really care to make grape, but I do make one small batch of grape every year just for my brother. And but
maybe most sample it.
That's about it. I might drink maybe a shot a month. A 1 ounce shot a month, if that. I had made some wine, peach mango wine, and one of my friends came down one day and he said, man, my wife's in a hell of a mood. She's on the rag. She's bitching, raising hell about everything. He said, when I open the door.
That's your next shirt.
He said, when I open the door, I have to throw my hat in, and if it comes back out, I know not to go in, but if it stays in, it's safe. I can come in. So he said, do you have some wine that you could hook me up with so I could take and give her? I was like, yeah, man, I'll give you a bottle. And I give him a bottle of peach mango wine. And he takes it home, and the very next day he comes back smiling, all happy and everything, like he just got laid first time in his life. Had a perma grin on his face. You couldn't wipe it off. And I said, well, was that wine good? He said, man, that's the world's fastest panty remover.
I got a feeling it's not 12% is what I'm thinking. It's probably just a little bit stronger than that.
Well, I'll put it to you this way. The pear wine that I make, you can't drink but one solo cup full of it, and that's with ice, and you're drunk. Period.
Yeah, we call that moonshine, but tomato, tomato, you know.
No, literally, it's wine. I don't cook none of it off. It's wine, you know. I mean, I've got real good at making it. I can make dry wine. I can almost make a custom wine, dry or not dry. I can do that, you know. and I can make it burn like gas all the way down, if you like, or I can make it real mild, you know, I can make it almost like a gin. And, you know, some of the wine I make is like bourbon.
Jack of all trades, man. I mean, really, it's crazy. What haven't you done? Now, you've mentioned that your wife is kind of like your manager. And you've talked about her, sounds like fondly. Now, in the movie, it seems like it was left kind of open, like, you know, that things, that the situation in the movie had been pulling y'all apart.
Well,
has this kind of helped things, or what's going on?
Well, we've had a rough time. I mean, my wife's disabled, and actually, when I broke my foot, it wasn't long after that. Literally, she broke her foot, had to have surgery on it. Then my mother fell and hurt her foot. And I mean, you know, after John Wood come back from Atlanta, and then we were talking a little bit, then all of a sudden we had an issue again. So somebody told him he should go to a sweat lodge and they would cure him from being addicted to crack. So he takes him up on the offer, and he goes to the mountains, wherever, and he meets this shaman, which is an Indian witch doctor. I have three-quarter part Indian in me, a flathead Indian, Cherokee Indian, and Sioux. And the witch doctor, he had the witch doctor put a curse on me, my family, and the grill. And I still own it. I just call it the world's most famous grill. And I was
so you never threw it in the ocean?
No, I had thought about it, and many times I've got about 1,000 pounds of coal down here, so I'm sure I could melt it down into a puddle and just throw it in the ocean. But I'm hoping that when the other movie is released, that they'll use it. That's kind of in the paperwork that they're, you know, they're going to have to or whatever. And then maybe I'll eBay it. And if I do eBay it, I'm going to throw in everything that went with it. All my radio memorabilia, every TV show I've been on DVDs or whatever. And I'm going to throw in my California sand rail. I bought it with Judge Mathis money, and then I spent another $5,000 on it, fixing it up and getting it in tip-top shape. You could take it, literally, you could drive it to the drag strip, change the back tires, and run her down a drag strip.
You mentioned
we can send you this audio pre-burnt if you want, if you're just going to burn it in the grill.
So you mentioned the other movie. Are you talking about that? Where we've heard some talk about making basically a dramatic film out of the story. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, supposedly, but everything's going to be changed around or whatever. I don't know. I mean, the details. All I know is I've heard through the grapevine that they've been talking to big movie making companies, you know, about doing it or whatever, and there's a lot of interest in it. And
who would you like to play you in a movie?
I'd like to be my damn self.
There you go. I like that.
You know, but they are against that. They want to hire somebody. I'm like, who the f*** in Hollywood is going to pull me off? You know, not one f***ing soul. Damn sure don't want Larry the Cable Guy in it. Everything he's been in flopped. You know,
Has that been brought up? I mean, because you came to that name really fast, because I was thinking, let's explore this idea. If someone's got to play you, let's pick it out. Now, you say Larry the Cable Guy. Was that idea brought to you, maybe?
Yeah, I've had several ideas brought to me. And I've also been told that the movie script has already been written years ago.
Huh.
Now, that's, wouldn't they need rights to your story?
Excuse me?
Do they have rights to the story now, or don't they have to get you to sign off on it anyway?
They are non-exclusive, which means I could sell it to anybody.
I gotcha. That makes sense. I mean, I can see how people would want to jump all over it right now and do that, but I do have a hard time picturing. I feel like some of the other people I feel like you could cast actors in, but you are a very singular individual, Shannon, and a very in a positive way, not in a negative way.
Thank you. I appreciate that from the bottom of my heart, man. I will always be myself with or without money. That's just paper printed on it. Any paper will lie long enough for any lie to be printed on it, you know. And I believe in something tangible, you know, gold, silver, you know, Ferrari, Lamborghini, you know,
stuff. I love that Ferrari was on. That was number three on the list after silver, like as far as currency goes. That's great.
Well, I think I appreciate you coming on our show, Shannon. I mean, we're going to talk a little bit about your movie as well, but just sort of separately. We have a review segment every week, and this is our new release. When I saw the movie back in April, I knew that whenever it got a chance to be seen by the biggest audience, that's when I'd want to talk about it. And so I'm just really glad that this worked out to have you on and to get us a chance to talk with the man who honestly made the big...
Hey, can you turn the video off on yours? Maybe that's kind of the problem. It cut out, and I think our internet all sucks because of the hurricane.
Okay, how about that? Is that working better?
Yeah, I've almost got Spencer back. Yeah, we kind of cut out. Let's wait to get him back on.
I'm here.
All right. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, just...
Shannon, if he's having a hard time hearing you, I think that that's the point. We'll probably go ahead and just say goodbye because I think our audio's giving us issues. So thank you so much, and we'll definitely be in touch soon, all right?
Do that. My birthday's in January.
All right. We'll definitely be in touch around that
Heck
time.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, sir. Have a good afternoon.
Y'all too. I've enjoyed
it. Take it easy, man.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
So we had some technical difficulties there. Right now we're in the middle of Hurricane Joaquin, just knocking us all around. I'm here in Charleston, and you know Shannon's in North Carolina. So we're just thankful Skype held on as long as it did. And so unfortunately we had to cut it a little shorter than we wanted to, because I swear we could have made this a 5-hour podcast. But Shannon, thank you so much. We look forward to talking to you again when more of these opportunities come to fruition that you've discussed about, you know, maybe the feature length film and who knows what else. So thanks so much. And we will see you all next week. You can find me at Dispenser D on Twitter. And Spencer, where can we find you? Because, you know, after this many podcasts, I probably still haven't memorized it yet.
You can find me at SpenLuke, SpenLuke, and then of course follow the website at Film Dispenser on every social media platform, and find us on iTunes and all the other podcasts we do, and check that out.
And maybe I'll actually write down that outro one of these days. I'm going to say it and I'm going to get it right and sound awesome.
And you're going to hear me like really thud fall out of my seat, like what just happened?
And then that was me dropping the mic too. Bam. See you next week.